Hej og velkommen til TechTalk episode 9. Jeg hedder Lars Benetsen, og jeg er denne gang gået solo for at snakke om sikkerhed i forbindelse med vores smartphones. Jeg læste her for nylig en rapport fra det amerikanske analysebureau, der hedder FICO, hvor de skriver, at den her funktion med at åbne telefonen ved hjælp af dit fingeraftryk, altså touchfunktionen, det er en af de største sikkerhedsrisici, der er i forbindelse med vores smartphones og generelt IT i de næste år. Det synes jeg lød enormt spændende. Ikke mindst fordi for mig, der står fingeraftrykket som noget relativt sikkert, mens at PIN-koder står som noget ret usikkert. Så jeg fik sat et interview op med Doug Clare, som er Vice President for Security Solutions hos FICO, for at høre, hvordan kan det ene og taget være, at touchfunktionen eller fingeraftryksfunktionen faktisk er så problematisk, når det kommer til sikkerhed. Jeg skal med samme sige, at hele interviewet kører på engelsk, og det kører over en Skype-forbindelse, så jeg undskylder på forhånd for lydkvaliteten. Vi kommer ind i interviewet, hvor jeg lige har spurgt Doug, hvordan det kan være, at de hos FICO betragter touchfunktionen, altså det her med at låse op med tommelfingeren eller med en finger, som værende en sikkerhedsrisiko.
Yeah, I think that the reason is this, right? And that is that while those technologies can be much more difficult to compromise, right? Your fingerprint is, you know, part of your thumbprint is part of your thumb, or things like, you know, retina scans or other types of biometrics, very difficult to hack. And unless someone steals your thumb, you might think you don't have much to worry about. But at the end of the day, the way those biometric devices work, right, is that the your thumbprint gets turned into essentially a digital file. And the digital file, of course, is associated with you and your account and your access privileges. And if that digital file should be compromised, or if the association of that digital file with your credentials should be manipulated in any way, very quickly you can find you're no longer the owner of the digital file associated with your thumbprint. And that therein lies the problem, right? Is that as a digital asset, once it, you know, moves from your thumb into your iPhone, and becomes a digital asset, that digital asset can be compromised. It doesn't mean that someone's going to change your thumbprint, because then, you know, that might not necessarily work right. But in terms of the associations of that digital asset with credentials and privileges and, you know, your money, that can be compromised, and that's a different story. In other words, if one of the bad guys should manage to, rather than your thumbprint being associated with your account access, manage to compromise it such that their thumbprint is now the digital file that controls access, then you've got a problem, because you no longer can really prove that your thumbprint belongs to you. That's really the danger of it. Perhaps much more difficult to compromise, but in the event that those biometric devices, whether it's your thumbprint or some other biometric measurement, become associated or disassociated with you or your privileges, much more difficult perhaps to rectify than just changing your password. You can't change your thumbprint.
No, it's kind of stuck to me. So basically, what you're saying is that whereas a password can be stolen, if my thumbprint digitally is stolen from my smartphone in some way, I'm in big trouble.
Right. That's exactly the point. It's fairly simple for you to, you know, type in a password recovery question and change your password and, you know, have your credentials reset.
Yeah.
Could be much more difficult to deal with that if your biometric information, which essentially, you know, become digitized and used to recognize you, if those become compromised, it could be difficult to prove that you're you.
Yeah.
You can't just reset.
I can kind of see the problem with that, because as all of us as of today, I'm using my thumbprint to access my bank online on my phone. and to pay. We have a system here in Denmark called Mobile Pay, where I can pay you money via my my iPhone or smartphone.
Right.
And I'm actually using my thumbprint to authorize that.
I think you're onto my point, right? And
yeah.
While I think that in general these can be good things, they can be tools for good, and likely, in all likelihood, right, as we move forward and get more experience with them, we'll find that they're much more difficult to compromise. I certainly believe that's true. I think the danger just lies in when they are.
Mm.
What kind of problem have we caused?
Yeah.
And
so what should we do then? Should we kind of use three-factor authentication, you know, so that the biometrics can never stand alone?
I think that's part of it, right? I think we've got to work to build in mechanisms for recovery, right? And
yeah.
I'm not sure that the industry has really thought about that yet. So I think there are two things, maybe three things that I would say about the use of biometrics. One is that in engineering systems that rely on biometrics, we should also be thinking about recovery for compromise and working that in such that that we engineer mechanisms for that recovery. Now, I'm not going to prescribe what they might be, right? I'm not sure my line of thinking has evolved to that point yet that I'm ready to opine on how we should be setting that up. But I do think it's something that we certainly need to talk about.
Yeah.
I think we should be careful where we require biometrics, right? If we're talking about a credit card account or, you know, accessing funds in a consumer bank account that perhaps has a few thousand dollars in it that we use to pay for our coffee or, you know, fill up for gas, I don't think that's really a big deal, right? I think the benefits of the security there of biometrics outweigh the risks because the loss can be small.
Yeah.
But I do think we've got to be careful, you know, where we apply it to things that are maybe more critical, more important, more dear to us, than the morning coffee. We should be very careful about where we deploy these, because I think the inconvenience of compromise could be quite significant, and the potential danger there for systems of higher value or of more importance, in the event that your biometric information is digitally disassociated with you, one could imagine a future that relies on biometrics [S2] Right. [S1] For all kinds of identification and access to resources where suddenly you're not you anymore.
Yeah.
And you don't really have a way to prove that you ever were. And that I think is the real challenge that we need to watch out for. I would add one other thing then, which I think is an important area where FICO is doing some work that I think can help here, and that is around essentially secondary forms of biometric authentication that are more behavioral than tactile, right? If we talk about a thumbprint or, you know, a retina or a facial recognition, where we rely on a digitized file, a digitized representation of ourselves that's very concrete. There are other things we can add to that can help. At least identify where those things may have been compromised, and that's really looking at behavioral information. So if you just take the iPhone example with the thumbprint as the biometric key, we can also look at behaviors exhibited on the iPhone because of the other features of the phone, right? We have within the phone the positioning sensors, the accelerometer sensors that are in the phone. And what we've discovered is that those also leave a essentially a fingerprint,
yeah,
if you will.
Yeah.
that can be used as a second form of authentication. So if we gain access to the phone with our thumb, we are also able to tell, utilizing analytics, whether or not the person holding the phone is the person who usually holds the phone. We can tell by the way they move the phone, where the phone goes, how the phone is set down, for instance, because all of that leaves a signal in the various positioning and accelerometer and other kinds of sensors that are in the phone. And of course, everyone has their own set of habits and, you know, holds the phone their own way, sets the phone down their own way, you know, as they move with their phone on their person, that phone moves in certain ways with certain discernible patterns that also form a sort of signature. And it's a signature that is substantially harder to replicate, right? You know, if your fingerprint is compromised, that is certainly one thing, right? But it's a very concrete, you know, let's call it, you know, a very distinct pattern that can could potentially be disassociated from the real owner. But behaviors are much more difficult to replicate. And with that, right, using those two things in combination, when they no longer match, right, when behavior no longer matches the thumbprint, let's say, then we have potentially a strong indicator of compromise. That might help us to minimize the damage, at least, right? Be able to recognize that that there could be a problem here, and therefore understand that perhaps you know, the privileges associated with that biometric should be looked at more closely and perhaps curtailed until you know, another form of authentication can be put forward.
Yeah, it kind of makes sense. So you kind of guess whether or not this is really is Lars or Doc who's actually holding their phone, and if any doubt arisen, you're gonna ask a security question or ask for a secondary.
And you know, we've been able to prove over, you know, the last couple of years of research that we can identify individuals, right? We can look at the positional behavior of the device, how the device is moved and used, and recognize patterns of individual use, right? When I'm holding my phone, it looks normal, but if I handed it to you and you were using it for 5 minutes, it would become apparent that it wasn't me that was holding the phone, and it's actually works quite well.
It kind of makes sense. I was kind of taken aback by the fact that you considered touch functions as a risk, but I see your point. It is kind of scary.
But yeah, I know that we've in conversations we've had with security people, you know, in the government sector, in kind of the you know, let's call it government security experts, right? There's certainly a wariness there, you know, where the stakes are of course quite high, right? In certain functions of government where assets are very are very sensitive, or, you know, access is really needs to be locked down. There's certainly in those sectors a recognition of the potential risk of biometric compromise, right? What it could mean, and I think that is what has inspired us to think a bit more about it and to you know, kind of consider some of those risks and think about things like behavioral identification as, you know, a means of you know, creating a higher level of security for at least for the kind of work that we do in the world of financial services and banking, and at least have an opportunity to offer other forms of kind of parallel identification to identify risk of compromise in biometric in kind of the hard biometrics, right?
Because you're not advocating not using the touch function or the fingerprint scanning. You're just advocating, be careful, think about what you're doing, and have a secondary.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep. Right. Think about what you're doing. Think about, as you deploy these things, also think about, think about how you would remediate a compromise, right? And have those mechanisms thought through in advance and don't become completely reliant on them, right? Have secondary factors of behavioral or perhaps other validation methods that can potentially allow you to more quickly recognize a compromise in those situations.
Kind of makes identity theft takes it to a whole new level now.
It does. If you think about identity theft in the past, right, up to this point, it's been all about, someone gets my account number or someone, gains access to something, gets my password, or physically steals my device, right? And that's how identity theft happens. But in the future, if we have a higher reliance on these biometrics, compromise there, an identity theft situation there could really be much more difficult to unravel.
Yeah.
When someone associates themselves with or associates their own biometric image, right, a biometric file, their own thumbprint with all of your privileges, and you show up with your thumb and your thumb is no longer associated with you. What do you do with that? Right. Yeah. Very difficult to solve.
It's going to be a hassle. That's for sure.
Yeah.
But if we then keep looking at that, at smartphones, is there any other potential risk that you see being the predominant in 27 and forward?
I guess with respect to biometrics, it certainly goes beyond the thumbprint and the phone, right? I think there's a lot more use of facial recognition in these applications, right? I know of some banks who are using facial recognition at the ATM, right? When you walk up to the ATM as part of the credentialing there, right? And I think it certainly carries the same risk. If you walk up to the ATM, it recognizes your face and then allows you access as part of the authentication at the ATM. You kind of have the same problem there, right? If another face becomes associated with your credentials, then you may have a difficult time proving you're you, and unwinding a compromise in that situation could be quite difficult.
And we have seen some very clever, those you call them skimmers, I think, that you've seen mounted on ATMs around the world, and where they actually lure your PIN code and even read your chip.
Yes.
And if they also can read your facial print, I mean, that's... It's going to be scary.
Yeah, it's interesting. We have a business here in the U.S. The product is called Card Alert, and we monitor the PIN debit network for signs of compromise. Essentially, triangulate common points of compromise across that ecosystem. And as a result of that, we get involved with many cases, criminal cases, criminal prosecutions, and we provide evidence of. Help provide evidence of those crimes to allow that prosecution to take place. But we've seen some pretty crazy things in terms of skimmers or, either skimmers at gas pumps or other point of sale places or at ATMs, which of course are, PIN debit functions.
Yeah.
Some of the schemes that people use to compromise ATMs or to gain access to ATMs are pretty, pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. Many times, there may be a skimmer for, to get the data off of the card. Mm. And then, placement of secondary cameras to watch the fingers as they touch the PIN pad.
Yeah.
And there's some clever ones for sure.
There are. I read even about some that actually analyzed the sound that the touchpad gave when you punched your PIN code in.
Sure. Each key makes a, even if there's not a tone associated with it, each key can make a unique sound.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
They're pretty good.
Yeah. They try pretty hard to you know, I guess it's because it's the bank, right? And that's where they have the money.
Exactly. So. Yeah. But as I read your report, all is not bad, because one of the things you actually said was that the consumers and even the companies are going to be even more interested in cybersecurity in 27 and above.
Yeah, I mean, we certainly see an increased an increased level of interest in security in the companies that we work with. But I believe that, you know, one of the things that has happened as a result of particularly the biometrics, becoming kind of commonplace on mm-hmm. on the phones in particular. I think there's certainly a higher degree of recognition of security as an issue on the part of consumers.
Yeah.
I think that there's people are just more tuned into it, right? They think about it a little bit more, where some of these things in the past have just been, if my bank wants me to do X, I'll do X, right? There's not a lot of thought put into it.
Yeah, true.
But as, you know, many people now have experienced some kind of a security problem, you know, they've been a victim of identity theft, or they've had an account compromised, or, you know, they've simply had fraud on a card account, gotten that phone call and had their card blocked and reissued, things like that. The major breaches where you've had, you know, millions or tens of millions of records stolen and had to have a card reissued as a result. Those things have taught consumers that the risk is real. That things do get compromised, that they have to be careful, that they should be concerned, at least up to a point, about their digital identity. And I certainly think it's gotten people tuned into the risks. That's a good thing, right? Awareness is the first step in healing, right? Yeah. Knowing you have a problem. And I think consumers, by and large, now are aware that there are risks in the ecosystem, and that they need to be vigilant and careful about how they're using their devices, where they're using it, how they access public Wi-Fi, what they're doing while they're on public Wi-Fi. I think those are all things that consumers are increasingly becoming aware of and cognizant of in their day-to-day interactions.
Yeah, because that has been kind of pain over the last few years, that the consumer, the average consumer at least, really thought, well, this is my phone, there's nothing on it, or, you know, I'm not going to do anything because, hey, there's nobody's going to attack my phone. It's kind of be the, you know, a very lax attitude towards security and your smartphones.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. But I do think that the frequency and scale of some of the compromises, right? I mean, in the U.S. here, we've had, the Target breach, we've had the Anthem breach, we've had Home Depot, several, very large, and all of those involving tens of millions of consumers. I was impacted myself by multiple of those, had cards reissued as a result. And I had to take other steps to reset my account privileges or receive free credit monitoring from those companies as a result. It certainly, woken me up, and I'm in this business, but as a consumer, I certainly behave with more caution than I did in the past. And I think twice about, public Wi-Fi and things like that, right? It's certainly something I pay more attention to than I did in the past.
So the wake-up calls really need to be there before you as a consumer heed the advices of guys like yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of scary because, I mean, we've been talking about malware and ransomware on personal computers, even Macintosh, over the last few years. People still seem to, disregard it up to a certain point.
Yeah, it's a topic that's technical in nature, right? So I think that, those of us who are in the business of technology maybe have a easier time getting our head around it than those who aren't. But I do think that that the public is kind of picking up on the risks, and you know, are beginning to behave with a little bit more sensibility.
Yeah. And basically that is what you've been saying all the time. You even with when you talked about biometrics, you need to be sensible here.
Yeah, you need to be sensible, and I think that, you know, we should. Consumers need to be sensible, mm-hmm. right? I think we as practitioners and users of this technology, right, as we, you know, whether we're the bank deploying something for biometrics or, you know, in the medical field in terms of, you know, maybe access to records or access to services there, or as we, you know, think about in the future, you know, our automobiles, right? Maybe you get in the car and the car recognizes us as an appropriate driver based on biometrics, right? I think that we just need to be sensible about where we deploy biometrics and again, kind of, you know, pre-engineer the mechanisms for recovery with compromise and, you know, just keep in mind what's at stake with respect to, you know, either mistakenly allowing access or mistakenly disallowing access to critical information or services at the, you know, when there is a compromise. We've got to have, I think, appropriate fallbacks and make sure that we're utilizing biometrics, you know, in ways that make sense so that when something does go wrong, you know, there's a convenient means of recovery instead of an utterly inconvenient means of recovery, right? And, I mean, there will be compromises, right? There just will be.
Definitely. And I mean, even as you said, because your biometrics is transformed into a digital file, I mean, if Apple is hacked, I mean, they've got my fingerprints. I mean, they can probably lose the data at some point.
Right. Use the data. That data could be, you know, inserted into some other authentication flow where, you know, your fingerprint gets swapped for theirs and then they have access to your information, or simply, you know, if that database of digital files of thumbprints is compromised in some way, then you know, they could insert their own in place of yours and then, you know, have access to your privileges based on their thumb. And of course that I think is the real scary part of it, right? To kind of disassociate you with your own immutable biometrics.
That's the most scary scenario that you can actually, at least that I can imagine. There are, before we, and I'd like to again thank you for your time, Doc. I know it's very early over in your end of the world. There are two more questions I'd like to ask you. There's not that much regarded to iPhone or smartphone security, but it is in your report. You're talking about the video camera on the computer and that AI. Those two things are might turn out to be not beneficiary, but actually our new enemies in 2017.
Yeah, I think that I think some of this has been, you know, well publicized in at least, you know, in a way that has at least given some people pause, right, to think about how cameras can be compromised, right? I mean, the camera controls, you know, are generally our digital controls, right? If we talk about how our cameras are turned on and accessed through our devices, those are things that can be controlled digitally. They can be controlled, and because they can be hacked and controlled remotely, and certainly that poses a risk. I think you know, there's been some stories in the press, frankly, that perhaps are a little bit overblown with respect to how those things can be compromised, but they certainly can be compromised, and I think we've got to be diligent and vigilant about how we control those things. I think, you know, with respect to those things, there's maybe a couple of layers of risk there, right? One is how the camera functionality can be controlled and accessed. and potentially used in bad ways. There's also a I think another risk here that's worth calling out, right? And that's the risk of other systems, right? Not necessarily your laptop or your phone, but other IoT systems, right? Security cameras, baby monitor cameras that you have in the home. And, these things are generally just not maintained the way our laptops are, right? Where, we have got software on our laptops that updates the software, that applies patches, all this happens automatically. And, our IT guys help us with that, or even the vendors of these things, the providers of these devices, work with us to make sure that software is updated timely. But when you talk about other kinds of devices, right, that are IoT devices, security cameras, I did a quick inventory at my house the other day, and I'm not really a gadget guy. I don't have all the latest gadgets, and I don't have a smart refrigerator or any of that kind of thing. But when I looked around my house, I made a quick inventory and I found 48 connected devices in my house.
That's a lot.
It's really scary, right? But if you start inventorying it, my wife and I each have a laptop. We have a home computer that sits on the desk at home. We've got our iPhones. But then, we also have security cameras at the house. We have solar panels on the roof and a solar controller inverter in the garage. Both of those are connected devices, back to the power company. We have smart TVs in the house. Our cars are connected, right? They have the features for navigation and the other features that are connected through cellular. And when we added it all up, we found 48 connected devices. And we're confident in, that many of them are maintained and updated in a reasonable way, in a very proactive way by the suppliers, but not so confident in many of the others, right, in terms of their ability to be compromised. And, this is an area, again, where I think analytics can play a big role in helping protect us, right? There's not necessarily going to be hard and fast ways for us to lock those things down, but we certainly can be looking at and applying analytics to monitor the behavior of those devices to look for out-of-pattern activities on them, as we do with other ecosystems, right? In the world of payment cards and real-time payment streams, we look for aberrant behavior, and that's an indicator of risk. And in those ways, we can utilize those signals to protect our credit cards and detect compromise. We can do that as well in the world of cybersecurity, looking at network traffic and endpoint behaviors to detect compromise and things like data exfiltration and the like. I think that the thing that we can do going forward is be looking for similar types of signals in other kinds of connected devices to identify points of compromise in those ecosystems as well.
And
I think that has a lot of power.
It does. The last thing I'd like you to comment on is, and we're going to jump right back to the smartphone here. You talk about killer apps that are going to kind of force the consumers to keep buying new phones all the time, because new apps cannot run on old phones. And you see that as a security risk, right?
I think there are some inherent risks in that, right? Where I think there's a level of effort that consumers make when they get a device to kind of get it set up, get it locked down, associate their biometric information with the device. That setup process in and of itself is kind of where certain compromises can happen, right? So I think, frequency of update there can introduce some risk. Of course, the manufacturers are obviously trying to improve the security with each iteration and add features that make them more secure. But I think that in all cases, right, change is an opportunity for the insertion of new risks. So I think there's some potential challenges with that, right?
Yeah.
And that's certainly one aspect of risk that can be associated with kind of the pace of change that we've subjected ourselves to in this ecosystem.
Yeah. Also, that the way I see that older apps that might barely run on a new smartphone might actually introduce some vulnerabilities to the new smartphone. But you need an app for, I don't know, I need one for my flight. When I go flying, I use an app there. But if that's not updated frequently enough, that might introduce some vulnerabilities.
Certainly, I think compatibility issues are a challenge, right? And yeah. I think that one of the ways that one of the things that, of course, we're forced to do, right, is to actually intentionally make new devices compatible with old software, right? Mm-hmm. For the convenience of the consumer, it's a design principle of ensuring backwards compatibility. But in ensuring backwards compatibility, we often, kind of settle for, yesterday's security standard as well, right? Mm-hmm. That's a challenge for sure. The ecosystem of software around these devices is so rich and so important, obviously, for consumers, right? They want to be able to do tomorrow what they did yesterday. As a result, right, there's kind of, at some level, there's always a decision that these manufacturers need to make around what's the lowest common denominator, right? Exactly. How much backwards compatibility am I going to enable? And of course, in enabling any of it, you inherently take on at least some of the risk of the past.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
That's certainly a challenge.
Yeah. Doc, I know you've been up very early. I have another meeting coming up very soon, but I do thank you a lot for your time. It's been great, and it was very interesting to hear about the touch functions and the potential risks.
I've enjoyed the conversation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and you have a good one.
You too.
Cheers. Bye. Ingen tvivl om, at bruge fingeraftrykket til at åbne for din smartphone, mobile pay, din bank, det er noget, vi kommer til at se meget mere af, og det er kommet for at blive. Jeg håber på, at der bliver lyttet til folk som Dr. Claire, når de kommer og fortæller om, hvad for nogle risici, der er forbundet med at bruge fingeraftrykket. Jeg tror på det, og jeg er ikke et sekund i tvivl om, at fremtiden kommer til at byde på meget mere biometri, når det handler om vores smartphones. Jeg hedder Lars Benetsen, jeg vil godt have lov til at sige tak, fordi du lyttede med, og jeg håber, jeg ser dig næste gang, vi laver en episode af Tech Talk. Tak for det.